welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, February 7th, 2010. I'm Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with me. We're recording a little earlier than we usually do because...
Super Bowl Sunday!
Because Yvonne actually forgot. I'm like... So you'll be available at the regular time. I presume you won't be available at the regular time. And Yvonne's like, sure, of course I'll be available. And I'm like, Yvonne, aren't you going to be like watching that like annual big semi-popular sporting event I hear about every once in a while? And he's like, oh, crap, I forgot.
Yeah, well, I mean, I you know, one thing is that I was an idiot about it because I was still clinging to hope that maybe – I wouldn't get invited to the game. Now, look, we still got 7 hours till kickoff, okay? It may still happen. I, you know, look, one of my relatives' companies has a suite at the Super Bowl. He's been invited. They've got tickets. What I'm praying is that somebody got stuck in the snowstorm or something, you know, couldn't make it down, and that one of those luxury suite spots opens up by kickoff. So that's all what I'm clinging to hope. I'm clinging to hope that the snowstorm fucked everything up and that a couple of people could show and I could be sitting at the suite during the game, which I, having been at one of these games in one of those suites, I could tell, not a Super Bowl, but a regular season game, it was good during the regular season. I can't imagine what the heck it would be to go during the Super Bowl. So, you know, we got the concert and the thing and, you know, and everything going. And you can watch the ads if you're in the suite, of course, because they've got TVs in the suite, you know. So you get the whole experience, you know, of the live thing with the TV thing all at the same time. I mean, you know, it's fucking, you know. And the one thing is that the suites have windows that open and close. So if it's, you know, if the weather's too bad or whatever, you can close them or you can open them, you know. It's like, you know, it's great.
My own personal level of involvement in Super Bowls is there was one year once where I decided I wanted to see what the hype was about, and I actually watched the whole game, and that was back when I was in high school or something. That was the Super Bowl that had like the refrigerator Perry or whatever.
Oh yeah, that was, geez, that was 25 years ago.
Yeah, so wow. So you can tell my level of dedication. Since then, there have been a couple of years where I TiVo'd the game and then fast-forwarded to watch the commercials.
Okay.
But then the last few years, I haven't even noticed the fact that it existed. So.
Okay. Well,
and the
I
only
wasn't
reason I noticed this time is because I realized that you would probably want to miss the show for it. So.
Well, yeah. Well, the one thing is, I mean, this week, of course, I mean, everybody's down here. The Super Bowl hype machine has been going, you know, but full blast. You know, I was in South Beach on Saturday having dinner, and you know, the place, you know, with all the streets closed, the events, and all the stuff. I mean, it was pretty wild. So anyway,
let's move on to our first real topic.
All right, yes.
So, there were a bunch of economic announcements this week.
Well, there were a couple of significant developments in economy. The two major ones that happened this week was, one is that there's a developing crisis with some Eurozone countries. And by Eurozone, I mean, you know, countries that have adopted the euro as a currency in Europe. You know, there's been lingering questions about whether they can pay their debts, because the economic downturn has hit them hard. The worst ones that have been hit are Greece, Portugal, Spain, and Italy. Greece, Portugal, Spain, and Italy, I mean, have unemployment rates that are out of this world. Spain right now, if I remember correctly, was reporting a 25% unemployment rate at the moment. Now, I do put a caveat on this. Spain has always reported some astronomically high unemployment rates, as far as I remember. Now, there's always been this thing where in Spain, a lot of people are collecting unemployment benefits and are still working because they're pretty generous and they're pretty open-ended, okay? But even still, anyway, take out the fudge factor for the guys that are collecting the unemployment benefits and are working, still a pretty bad recession, as well as in the other countries. And they've been having to issue a lot of debt Their percentage of debt to GDP is far higher than, say, than the United States, for example. I mean, just to give one. And so there's been a lingering doubts about whether they can repay. Main reason is because of the fact that they adopted the euro. Because if you weren't in the eurozone and all of a sudden you were issuing debt, maybe your currency would fall, therefore, spurring your exports and, you know, increasing your ability of receiving, say, more foreign currency, you know, because your currency was, lower. And so therefore, you were able to earn more of your currency, okay, by selling stuff. They can't do this right now because they're in the eurozone. So there's been this. And the euro hasn't fallen much, so there is this debate about this whole thing and whether, you know, it's creating even more difficulties for them. So there is that crisis with that group, and that really caused a lot of people to get nervous during the week, especially regarding their debt and whether they were going to default. So now, how directly connected is that really to the stock market falling this week, which the stock market fell like about, I guess, 5% during the week? Look, I think that the main reason why the stock market fell this week was a little bit more due to the fact that people had made a killing over the last year, and they just decided to lock in their profits right now, given sudden news coming out, then because of anything that fundamentally was affecting a lot of the companies, because many companies reported their profits in the last few weeks, and the profits have been good, you know? So there is a debate there whether, you know, this is directly affecting them. Also, we had an unemployment report on Friday, which showed
that I was going to mention that if you didn't.
Yeah. That was the second part I was getting to. The unemployment report that showed that the unemployment rate dropped about half a percentage point. Now, you know, this is a survey, and so therefore, you know, the surveys whether you're participating in the workforce or you decided to give up on looking for work, it could be in part the reason why that drop was so steep, because it went from 10.2 to 9.7 was – In large part because some people just gave up looking for work. So therefore, the labor force actually shrank, okay, instead of more jobs happening, which is probably the case. However, if you look at how many people got laid off, the number was actually pretty small, okay? Only, you know, it was 22,000. Now, we had been running at about 500,000, okay, layoffs. So what that is showing, if you look at the numbers, is that, you know, the layoffs have definitely significantly slowed down, and so that we are slowly turning a corner in terms of the employment situation.
Right. We're still at the point, right? I mean, I've seen a couple different charts, and it's confusing. So you correct me on my facts here, but we're still at the point where the rate in the increase of unemployment is going up as opposed to the actual raw number really going down? Or is it about flat now? It's at that
– it's about flat.
Cusp. So,
yeah, it's
so,
flat now.
So
yeah.
If you look at the chart – and I forget I'll try to look it up during our break or something. But there was one site that had a chart that was not that was just the basically the percent of employed people as a percentage of the entire population – from decrease since the peak. And
that's right.
And it shows that, you know, we've basically been on a downward trend, down, and we've just about flattened out. But we haven't really made our way back up to
No. We haven't made our way back up at all. That's exactly right. That you just described it perfectly. I mean, we flattened out, but definitely not increasing. So we're just at the inflection point really right now. And, you know, these things take time. If you go back to the 2001 recession, employment didn't really jobs didn't start being created until 2 years after the nadir of the recession. I mean, there was that's one of the things that people were all economists and people like myself were really upset with the Bush administration, because when the Bush administration said that they cut taxes in order to stimulate the economy, it really didn't create jobs. He spent the first 3 years of an administration in which there were no jobs created. And it's the reason why at the end of his administration, we had the worst job creation record that any president had, because those tax cuts, all they did was stuff more money into people that had a lot of money already and did not encourage creating any jobs. It is the reason why the Obama administration decided to go with the stimulus in which money was actually spent on projects, because we knew that those would create, and I'm including we because I agreed with it, not because I work with Obama, but those would create jobs, okay? The others would just stuff people's money that already had money in the first place. So it has made sense, and it has helped, you know, stave off what would have been, I think, in my estimation, if it hadn't happened, because if you had the multiplier effect of those jobs created, you know, they said they created 500,000 jobs, but those are 500,000 direct jobs. If you add, you know, the multiplier effect of the people spending money, I'm sure it would probably staved off a significant amount of more layoffs. So anyway, so that's the, you know, instead of going into further explanation, I think that that's what's happening with this. So I think that we're at a decent point right now where, you know, we're slowly getting, you know, flattening out, and we're going to head into a positive direction at some point.
Right. Now, I mean, the chart I'm looking for, which I'll probably never find at this point now that I've mentioned it.
Now that you mentioned it, of course.
Yeah, of course. It you know, actually shows the job situation with this recession versus the job situation with all of the other post-World War II.
I know which one it is. I remember that one. Yeah. But I don't remember where to find it right now.
Yeah, but what it shows is that just in terms of the employment metric, as opposed to other metrics, we're way worse than all of these other recent recessions.
Yes. So. Then the recent ones, absolutely. No doubt about it.
Recent meaning, I mean, going back everything since the Great Depression, essentially.
I mean, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, we went from 4% unemployment to north of 10% in a matter of less than a year and a half. If you think about even the early 1980 recession, unemployment at that time, at the end of the Carter administration, was already bad. I mean, the country had been experiencing inflation, high oil prices, problems with employment. It just got exacerbated at that time, but the unemployment rate was already high. I mean, the point
right,
from
so the difference our, from the recent peak was less.
Yes, absolutely. So anyway, all right. So I don't know. That's all I have to say on that subject right now.
Let's take a break. We will be right back after this exciting message. Okay, and we're back. And before we move on to next topic, I just want to say I found that graph. It was on the Calculated Risk blog. That's calculatedriskblog.com. And okay. It was posted, the latest version of it that I'm talking about was posted February 5th at 8:30 a.m. If you want to scroll down, in an article titled Employment Report, 20K Jobs Lost, 9.7% Unemployment Rate.
Implosion Report?
Yeah, something like that. Okay. And it's the second graph in the article, and it's described as, the second graph shows the job losses from the start of the employment recession in percentage terms, as opposed to number of jobs lost. And
jobs and the unemployment rate.
Right. Okay, for the current recession, employment peaked in December 2007. Oh, an alarm going off.
Okay, well, that's an alert.
alert.
Evacuate!
Anyway, From the current recession, employment peaked in December 2007, and this recession is by far the worst recession since World War II in percentage terms, and second worst in terms of the unemployment rate, with only the early 80s recession being worse. And you see
the early 80s recession was actually worse. I actually thought that it was not.
Well, in terms of the unemployment rate versus the percentage, there are different ways of measuring.
The unemployment rate, the absolute unemployment rate, yes, that's absolutely, it was higher. So that's definitely true. Yes.
So in any case, you see this nice little red line representing our current recession that sort of, it started out slower than some of the others, then sped up past everything else, and is just now starting to turn around. And it looks like only one other recession, like in the 50s, was this slow to turn around. Although it didn't go anywhere near as deep. Anyway, so
Employment Report? Is that the one that you said that had
Employment Report was the name of the – and it's the second graph.
Okay.
On calculatedriskblog.com. Okay, let's move on. So the next thing, you wanted to talk a little bit about an alumni association you were asked to join and then tie into some current events.
First, let's talk a little bit about the current event itself, because I think that you since I have been disconnected from Earth a little bit, because I in my new job I've been so busy during the days that I gotta admit I used to be able to look a little bit more at the news of what the hell was happening during the day than I have been recently. So someday this week, all of a sudden, a friend of mine posts on my wall on Facebook saying, "Hey, I heard that on your spare time you had been dressing up as a sheep, as a death sheep or a diabolical sheep, devil sheep, whatever, and like running around the countryside." And I'm like, "What the fuck is she talking about?" So I'm like, "Wait a minute, it's got to be something related to current events. Let me look this up." So I went and I looked it up, and lo and behold, I found out that my wonderful friend, my dearest ex-colleague, Carly Fiorina, had run some idiotic commercial, about sheep. I mean, I don't know. How do you explain the you explain the fucking commercial to me, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, first of all, everybody should just go out there and Google or YouTube for the Carly Fiorina sheep, something like that. Or it's actually its official name is like FCINO, fiscal conservative in name only.
Right, fiscal conservative in name only. That was the fucking reference. Yeah, okay.
And actually, they put out a website directly. For that, let's see, is it just FCINO.com? Let me see.
Hold on. Yes, I'm pretty sure it was.
There we go. So it's FCINO.com. You can go see this commercial.
Yep.
And right on the homepage, it's got a picture of this wonderful sheep. Anyway, so this is just a campaign commercial for the primaries, the Republican primaries. This is an attack ad against one of the other people in this race, Tom Campbell, who is also a Republican.
Right.
But she's basically saying he's a fiscal conservative in name only, blah, blah, blah. And anyway, it's got a bunch of sheep running around in a field.
Right.
And then it's got this one sheep that's supposed to be Tom Campbell. Who like first gets lifted up on some sort of pedestal and then falls and then chases people or whatever, that is supposed to be Tom Campbell in a sheep suit with glowing red eyes.
How did you like my acting, Jeff?
Evil. You did great, Yvonne.
Thank you.
You were amazing.
Okay. The ad is just stupid. Okay,
Let's put it this way. The ad is the kind of ad that leaves you scratching your head and going, "What the fuck is this?" as opposed to that in any way making you think. Well, first of all, it's not
about the issues.
It's not supposed to tell you anything about Carly. It's just supposed to make you think, "Ooh, I can't trust that Campbell guy because he dresses up as sheep and
like runs sheep around. And runs around the countryside."
Exactly. Okay. Well, you know, the idea is he's you know, he'll tell you he's all fiscally conservative and stuff, but really he's going to be all tax and spendy. He refused to sign the taxpayer protection pledge. He architected some bloated budget in 2005. He supported tax increases, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you know, and this is contrary to what Carly's record. I mean, Carly's record was that she talked out of her ass about executing shit, and she never did any of it, okay? I mean, other than overpaying for Compaq, I mean, a ridiculous amount of money, then, you know, not really doing a great job of squeezing the operational efficiencies out of the company that she was supposed to, because she planned for the initial merger and that part, that's fine. But as time wore on, you know, getting the operations to their proper level, she never did that. And so, I mean, what the fuck is her track record? Really, what? Looser Technologies? I mean, Lucent Technologies? What? She sold hundreds of millions of dollars of deals that then went on and went bankrupt at the company because the companies that you extended credit to never had the money to pay for it in the first place. So, you know, fucking idiot, I swear to God. Jeez. You know, well, there was a debate this week. The reason why I was mentioning
I just wanted to mention, I don't think anybody could hear it, but I just started playing the commercial in the background for a little bit, so I apologize if anybody could hear it.
Okay.
I don't think it came through, but yeah, whatever.
I started to watch the
exciting sheep, like, sort of frolicking through the field, and, you know, this ominous voiceover. It's just amusing.
It's just confusing. I mean, at first you just watch it. At first it's confusing. Then it's just, you know, flat out wacky.
Well, it's okay, one thing when the sheep are wandering around, and the you got the voiceover. The time it gets absolutely surreal is when you get the guy in the sheep suit running around, crawling around the field.
Right.
And, yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. So,
sorry, you got
well,
an
as I was mentioning, well, there was a discussion this week because I actually joined this group called the HP Alumni Association, which I went, and it's kind of funny because, you know, one of the things that they were talking about, there was a piece on KQED which is a public radio station in the Bay Area, called about the HP phenomenon, and they were talking about how, unlike other companies, I mean, that, you know, XHP employees actually have an alumni association, heaven forbid. Like, you know, like we all went to college together. and you know, we're talking, and it's true. I mean, the one thing I've seen is that us as XHP employees, all the ones that I know, we're still like a relatively cohesive unit. Okay. It's scary. I mean, in one sense, I mean, it's like that we still, you know, are that together, even after we've all left employment.
Yep.
Yeah. We do. And, you know, they have a lot of stuff to help out people that actually left HP in order to do bigger and better and other things. But the one thing about it is that we had an intense debate about Carly Fiorina that was posted a couple of weeks ago. You can look at it on KQED and that about her job and her job performance. And so that's part of the thing that I think it's still even to this day controversial, in which, you know, there are still pockets of XHP employees that defend her, that believe that she saved the company, and which I actually totally disagree with it. I think that she, what she did, well, the main thing is that when they talk about the company, one of the things that why I liked the company when I joined it was the fact that it was very decentralized. The decision making was very much down at the bottom. I mean, you know, they were talking about how Dave Packard, for example, was opposed to fucking laser printers, for Pete's sake. But, you know, he was. But, you know, the guy said, "Oh fuck, let the old man go back to Palo Alto. We'll still ship these things anyway." So, or like one time that they built this. They built the first CRT screen for a computer at one point. And they had it in the lab, and Dave Packard shows up, and he thinks, "Oh, this thing's never going to work." And he tells the guy, "Well, I don't want to see this thing in the lab anymore." So the guy's like, okay, you don't want to see it in the lab? Well, we have it in production. Okay, fine. Just take it out of the lab. We'll send it to production. So they started building the damn things. So he comes back about a year later. Dave Packard, I thought I never wanted to see this thing. They said, nope, you said you didn't want to see it in the lab anymore. So we got in the production line going. We're making them right now. So he actually rewarded the guy for it. But I think that the point of that is that the company worked it that way. And the reason why Carly did not like it, changed the culture so much, was because she was used to a command and control company that everything flowed from the top, which is what she changed it to. And that's really taken much of anything that had to do with the HP way when you completely turned it into that. Okay. So Carly is a person that's a very big control freak. She likes the command and control, but yet at the same time, she doesn't get into the details. So she's going against a guy who, because supposedly he's not a fiscal conservative, when she's never even bothered with, like, really going into details. That fucking bitch. She's an idiot.
You know, I've never been able to really understand, you know, what your thoughts were on Carly. You like her, right?
Oh, yeah, I love her, you know? Yeah, I never did anything to try to fuck her. No. I can't stand the woman. I mean, every time that I, you know, and it's not just me. There are so many people from the company that every time it is got to be one of the most lightning rod persons. I mean, you say that name in a congregation of XHB people. I mean, it's like you're talking about Satan, okay, in front of people. It's really, you know, yeah, we definitely did not like the bitch. So
okay,
anyway,
on that note, it's time to take a break, and when we get back, we'll talk about a different bitch.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Sing Me Lover, Sing Me Poet, by Rebecca Lindenberg. Sing me pomegranates and headstones, sing me into this or that myth, sing me into the soft throbbing body of a bird in the palm. Sing me into the throat of a minstrel in the January of a long, long year. Sing me a camera lucida or obscura. Sing me how you see me because I can't. I can sing you marble flesh of statue, pursuit caught. I can sing a sharp needle into soft flesh, like a just right word into talk. I can sing my anger, which sings me sometimes. You say, hard at work, I see and take a look at this, will you? And something about the future. Sing me a future, shared. Scent of salt grass, sting of honey, sound of rice poured into a pan. Please, poet, lover, please, sing.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, we are back, and I was, of course, a bit flippant, but our next topic is Sarah Palin. There are two real things that happened over the last week with Sarah Palin. I guess the one that happened first, and I'll just mention briefly, because Yvonne mentioned he didn't know much about this part. Is that a report came out detailing, it was basically a dump of a lot of emails that happened during her administration that people filed various, you know, requests to make public because they were, you know, I'm not sure if these were the ones where she was using private accounts for government business or whatever, but anyway, because these were related to government activity, it was decided eventually that they should be made public. There was a dump of a lot of these, and people have been going through them. And one of the things that's coming out of it is just how involved her husband, Todd Palin, was in a lot of government activities. First spouses of all sorts in general aren't supposed to be it's not an official government role. Let's put it that way. But he was injecting himself into everything from political appointments to how the government was dealing with various companies, to all kinds of other stuff. I don't know, you know, in terms of legally, how much of this is, you know, fine and dandy? How much is not? I mean, it's clearly a lot of it was informal. You know, was sort of a unpaid advisor of, you know, which, you know, hey, that's, spouses do that, I guess. And, you know, and then there were other emails related to, like, them trying to figure out, you know, a public event that they could go to so that they can expense a trip that they were going to take anyway. And, you know, things like that. So there was a lot of interesting, you know, stuff in this dump that was, you know, basically pointing to somewhat fishy behavior by Sarah Palin and her administration and her husband while she was governor of Alaska. I don't know how much will stick, in my opinion.
I mean, you know, it's like I think it was just, I don't know about illegal, but certainly I find it inappropriate that a person's spouse would interject themselves so much into their job. I mean, Todd, I believe, still had a job, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
he was working for
some
oil company.
For an oil company. So I find it honestly quite inappropriate. I mean, there's one thing about me coming home and asking your spouse, well, what would you do if you had this or that? That's one thing. But this level of involvement, I mean, I personally, I don't know. I'm not saying that it's illegal. But I find it inappropriate.
But, you know, on the other hand, they're precedents for this kind of thing. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton put Hillary in charge of health care.
No. I understand that. I mean, yeah, but you know, she was actually appointed to a specific, you know, to a specific role. I mean, that's one thing about putting your spouse in charge. Say, if he was formally put in charge of, I don't know, something in the administration versus, you know, actually doing the stuff that really goes with her job. See what I'm saying? I guess I don't know. Listen, but like I said, one thing. I don't know if this is anything illegal. I just don't agree with operating that way. That's all. And you know, and that I mean, that's, you know, not exactly an incredibly harsh criticism of her. I just don't think that's the appropriate way to handle that. That's all. It's, you know, out. But you know,
yeah,
it's not illegal.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the things that have come up over Palin, you know, it is not. You know, there are no clear cut cases that are like, you know, she did blah, and that, you know, that's clearly illegal, and she should be prosecuted for it, and blah blah blah. It seems like, you know, she was in the business of, you know, skirting those lines, you know, and like you said, I think it's a key of, you know, they're not everything that is unethical is illegal or should be illegal. You know,
or should be illegal.
But,
that's right.
But there's clearly a notion of, you know, are you doing what is right and makes sense here? And I think there's just a lot of funny sort of shenanigans going around. If you look at Sarah Palin and her history and what she's doing, and you know, folks here know I read out Andrew Sullivan's blog. He's maintained a list of sort of the wacky lies of Sarah Palin, and I forget exactly what he calls it, but basically it's places where she has said one thing publicly that is just demonstrably false based on evidence from other things. And some of these are really, really minor, stupid things. Some of them are more major, you know.
But it's a pattern.
But it's a pattern, and it's like, you know, and the weirdness about some of them is, why? Like, there are things where, you know, what possible gain, what possible difference would the truth versus the falsehood she said make? But yet she went with the false one anyway, you know? And you know, it's quite possible that a lot of it's not, you know, even intentional. It may just be she doesn't have a good grasp of truth versus fiction. I don't know.
It could be, or she has a bad memory and doesn't recollect stuff. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that happens.
I mean, I don't know. Yesterday I was like, you know, I'm sitting here talking with my wife about something that happened, and I'm like, she, for some reason, you know, had a completely erroneous recollection of what the hell happened, like, that day. I mean, it was just, and I'm like, no, that's not what happened.
Well,
I'm like, no, I mean, look, we can ask all these people that were there. That's not what happened. But she was convinced somehow that her recollection of it was the right one, though.
Oh, you know, if I ever get pulled into the one of these things where, you know, I'm getting grilled on what happened on such and such day, yeah, I'm completely fucked. I am going to jail for perjury or something, or I'm going to be the one going, I don't remember, because I mean, I know my memory is awful. Like, you ask me what I did yesterday, I'm like, I don't know. But more to the point, like the kind of thing you just mentioned where there are different memories of things. I mean, I certainly have that happen to me all the time where, you know, I'll be in a conversation with, Brandy and, you know, like you said with Juana, something comes up and she's like, well, don't you remember that we did this? And I'm like, no,
no,
I have no idea what you're talking about. and then at some point I'm like, look, okay, I believe you. I have no memory of this event whatsoever, but I believe you that we had that conversation that you're describing, or that we went and did that thing, but I just don't remember.
You don't remember. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, it happens a lot.
Anyway,
okay.
She also gave a speech.
And oh, yeah, at the teabagger group thing.
Yes. Yeah,
so, you know, the one thing, but here, you know what I found funny about this whole tea idiot event thing? I'm calling it that because, you know, I saw that the reason they got together was to figure out how to harness their anger, I guess.
Okay. Well,
here's what I saw the group could figure out. We're pissed off about a whole bunch of stuff. Now, we really don't know what to do about it or do with it, but we're pissed off.
Uh-huh.
I think so. I don't know. I mean,
well, to put it in a less sort of negative fashion, what it is,
okay,
is there's a movement that has grown up. They've had a grassroots plus, you know, apparently some outside organizations, you know, priming the pump. But, you know, they had a thing that sort of rose up out of whole cloth. And a whole bunch of demonstrations, a whole bunch of things, a whole bunch of energy happening. And
basically,
they're looking to see if they can channel this into an actual political movement that can influence things in one way or another. I mean, there's been talk of everything from, you know, them just continuing to be a force in the Republican Party to actually some people talking about them starting a new party. You know,
right.
and so there's a whole bunch of different things there, and basically, they had a lot of controversy coming up to this convention. Like there was a lot of groups that sort of broke off and said, you know, we're not taking part in that, and it was kind of a mess. But eventually, they had the thing, and Sarah Palin was their keynote speaker. I listened to like the last few minutes of the speech and a couple minutes of the Q&A. I did not watch the whole thing.
You didn't want to go over quota, your idiocy quota for the week, I guess?
You know, well, I sort of realized it was on halfway through. But, you know...
Okay.
But the part I heard was kind of scary, you know?
oh, shit. Oh, my God. What the fuck did she say?
Well, no...
Invading.
I caught the part about, you know, national security, and it was basically, you know, there wasn't a whole bunch of content there. There were just a lot of sort of slogans, but they were all sort of the kind of, I don't know. This is sort of like, go get them, us against them, you know, all that sort of Cheney-esque kind of stuff, but. You know, and then when she was finishing, you know, the crowd was chanting "Run Sarah, run, run Sarah, run," and they were all excited about this woman. And I'm like, you know, I mean, it would be a highly amusing presidential race with her in it. But
her unfavorable ratings are pretty high. I saw, and you know what, the funniest thing, her unfavorable rating is far higher with women than it is with men.
Mm-hmm.
Women really don't like Sarah Palin, okay? Overall. It's kind of like, you know, I don't know why the reason is, but definitely she has a way of rubbing other women the wrong way, is what I've noticed. So
yeah. So I'll notice one more thing that's going around the blogosphere today. is they caught her at one point during the Q&A looking at her hand, and it turned
out... Oh, she had a crib sheet?
If you look, you Google it now, you'll find a number of places where there are pictures. Yes, she had handwritten notes on the palm of her hand that she was referring to, where she'd obviously just written with a pen on her hand some point. And so, you know, they say things like, you know, budget / cuts. You know, it's really just at that level. It's just a few words, but it's kind of amusing.
Oh boy. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean,
she's recently, you know, made comments about, you know, the president using teleprompters and such. And this is in the same ballpark, but I really don't think it's a big deal. The only thing that writing on your hand shows, I mean, I don't care about, like...
It shows that you weren't really prepared.
No, you did
that at the end.
No.
You did that, like, quickly, like, at the end of the thing.
Well, but look, you know, using notes in a Q&A or even for a speech, there's nothing wrong with that, you know?
There's nothing wrong with that. When I'm going to go and, like, you know, give a presentation, I usually have a few notes.
Yeah, of course.
Just getting on track with the presentation.
I think almost everybody does. And, in fact, I don't know. It just seems like a prudent thing to do. Even if you're giving a speech you've completely memorized, it's a prudent thing to do to have some notes or whatever, you know, things you want to make sure to mention, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Yes. She's writing on her hand. Yeah. I've written on my hand. I admit to having written it.
I have not written on my hand since I was in high school. Okay.
Well, and that is where I would imagine most of the writing on your hand or other body parts happens.
I mean, I used to have a note.
Anyway.
So this brings me to my nice little Republican mailer, which I got.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back. You can talk about your mailer, and we wanted to talk a little bit about the rest of the hotel. Okay.
Right.
Here we go.
First way to health, said the CDC to me, wash hands to be safe and healthy. The second way to health, said the CDC to me, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The third way to health, said the CDC to me, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The fourth way to health, said the CDC to me, don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The fifth way to health, said the CDC to me, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The sixth way to health, said the CDC to me, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The seventh way to health, said the CDC to me, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The eighth way to health, said the CDC to me, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The ninth way to health, said the CDC to me, monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The tenth way to health, said the CDC to me, practice fire safety, monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The 11th way to health, said the CDC to me, prepare dinner safely, practice fire safety, monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. 12th way to hell, said the CDC to me. Eat well and get moving, prepare dinner safely, practice fire safety, monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving. Be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy.
For the most accurate health information, visit www.cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO 24/7.
Okay.
For some damn reason, the damn Republicans believe that I'm a Republican. Yeah. You have been selected to represent Republican voters in Florida's 19th congressional district. And Gloves Clean Fine documents registered in your name. And it's got all these very official things talking about census tracking codes and, I don't know, all these official looking things, okay? And there's some of the questions which I find, you know, funny. So it's got this questionnaire. It's got about, I don't know how many questions does this have here. Say 40 questions, okay? So let's see. Some of the it's got different sections. Let's talk about let's see. National defense. Do you believe the Obama administration is right in dramatically scaling back our nation's military? Obama was dramatically scaling back our nation's military? These are some of the questions that I'm like going through this, and I'm like, okay. Do you favor or oppose increased American troop presence in Afghanistan? Well, that's okay. You know, that's okay. That's a question. Okay. You know, you can. Do you trust the Democrats to take all the steps necessary to keep our nation secure in this age where terrorists can strike our country at any moment? Do you agree with the Obama administration's decision to allow the 9/11 terrorists held at Guantanamo Bay to be tried in federal court in New York rather than military court? I guess that's an okay question. Do you worry that Russia is moving away from its relationship with the U.S. and trying to establish itself as a military and economic superpower? Let's see, what other stuff did they – I don't know why they send this whole crazy questionnaire. And then, of course, at the end, they are asking me for money.
Of course.
In my census – but you see, this is the thing, the terminology. Census certification and reply. Republican Party count on yours? I mean, a census certification reply? I mean, this seems like some really weaselly way that some direct mail company would try to squeeze money out of people, you know, instead of, you know, I cannot send a donation at the level right now because they asked 500, 250, 100, but I am closing $15 to help defray the cost of processing my census document. I mean, I guess that they think that Republican people are complete – I guess that they're complete idiots, so therefore they would get duped into believing this part of the census, and so they would send money back in order to send this? I mean, is that what they're doing with this thing? I mean, I don't know. So anyway, I thought that even if you were a Republican, this mailer was misleading, okay? And it is, you know, done by the Republican National Committee, okay? So, you know, by calling it a census, you know? I don't know. This
yeah.
is very, very Weasley mailing.
Yeah, well, you know. One thing, you mentioned, you know, they think you're a Republican, blah, blah, blah. I would actually encourage folks, you know, sign up for the mailing lists of all kinds of, like, political things. It's interesting to see how they go around. Like, during the last election, you know, I was on the mailing list for the McCain campaign, the Ron Paul campaign, maybe the Biden campaign in the early days. He dropped out pretty early, though. Obviously, the Obama folks, several others. And it's been interesting to see how those have continued after the election. Oh, there goes another alarm.
Alert! Alert! Evacuate! Oh, sorry.
Yeah, anyway, how these things have passed along. The Obama folks obviously have continued to send out messages through their mailing
yes.
lists. I am getting... I continue to get emails about local races in Florida because I used to live in Florida like 5 years ago and they still think I live there. On the Democratic side, I get those on a fairly regular basis. I just got something about some guy running locally that's somehow connected to the Ron Paul folks. And it's interesting to see what these people are saying. And it's just a little snippet from here and there. It also lets you see sort of how your name gets passed around.
Yes, yes, agree.
You know, because of course it's not just, you know, the people you originally give it to. There's a big business in selling and redistributing these lists, you know, for political purposes. So yeah, anyway, interesting stuff. Let's move on briefly, because we only have a few minutes left, really, to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which Obama, within the last week or so, has directed his military folks to figure out how to phase it out, and that this is something that has to be done by Congress as well. So he's going to be trying to push that through Congress. What are your thoughts here, Yvonne?
Look, I think that the policy was idiotic in the first place. So I actually what I don't understand is why the military is taking. Why can't just they, if they want to study it, fine, suspend it right now and then figure out whether, you know, whatever the fuck you're going to figure out. And,
well,
think that you're going to figure out anything other than it's just idiotic and to cancel it.
Well, I mean, the president could, I guess, give an order not to enforce it. But technically speaking, this is a law. This is not something that the military directly has discretion over. There needs to be congressional action to remove it, remove the policy. And while yes, the administration could ignore the law, I actually
you know, for some reason thought it was either a regulation or a presidential.
It is a law of Congress.
Well, then, I mean, if it is the law, then it is a law. I mean, I don't, I'm also with you on that. I mean, if it is a law, I don't like, you know, just going around and, like, you know, telling people to ignore the frickin' law. I mean, if it's written that way, then, you know, but I would hope that they overturn this as soon as possible, to be honest with you. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Hey, but you need,
I mean, especially when we're, I don't know, I think, given, you know, if the Republicans are stupid enough to even stop it, I mean, I don't understand. You know, right now we're having problems retaining enough people in the military as it is, okay? We're having to force people to go back on additional tours. I mean, going and, like, getting rid of perfectly qualified military personnel because of this thing is just absolutely ridiculous. That's my opinion.
Well, and, you know, people are like, it'll make people uncomfortable, it'll hurt morale, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, my ass.
Well, you know, fundamentally... I mean, you know, maybe it will in the short term. I don't know. I mean,
I don't think so. I actually don't. They said the same thing about women in combat, and that's a whole bunch of fucking bullshit.
Well, I mean, and one thing is, I mean, you certainly can look at other militaries around the world that have dealt with this issue. I mean, you can say there are cultural differences, but I mean, for the most part, there have not been big problems in other places that have been. More liberal on this kind of thing, let's say. I mean, and fundamentally, it's a, you know, part of being in the military is follow your damn orders. So, you know, if push comes to shove, the higher ups, say crack down. I mean, having said that, I have heard from a variety of people that, you know, you mentioned women in the military, that, yeah, that transition was not exactly smooth. You know, but
at the end of the day, it happened, and is what it is.
It happened, but there's still a lot of issues there. It's still not, you know, it's a hard time being a female in the military compared to being a male, and
It's not as hard a time as it used to be. I actually instead of, like, you know, trying to cover your eyes and, like, you know, avoid the reality, I think it's better just deal with it, and that's it.
Right.
Move on.
And I mean, you know, I'm sure you had the same sort of issues when you first had, integration in the military, you know? And, you know, too bad. You suck it up, and you do the right thing, and people get used to it. And it may take a while, and that's fine, you know? Anyway, I've always, the joke I always made was, you know, if you've got all of these, military folks being all uncomfortable, you know, by, you know, there might be a gay person in their squad or whatever, you know, the other way to solve this is, you know, forget, you know, integrating gays into the military. Let's just go with an all-gay military.
Well, that'd be interesting.
You know, and I think, you know, they'd get the job done.
I would think so, too.
I'm, of course, joking, and that would be, you know, the same sort of segregation, would, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it would be kind of impractical as well, but, you know.
But anyway, I think this is the kind of thing where you just the people who are all concerned about this, you know, you just need to get over it. You know,
and yeah, pretty much.
I'm sorry, but you know, are you really afraid the guy's gonna hit on you or something? You know, whatever. Anyway,
just get over it. You know.
Okay, so I have nothing else on my list, unless you have anything else to mention.
No, we're done. We're toast. We're out. Sayonara. Okay. Sign off.
And, you know, in a couple years, we'll be talking about, you know, Sarah Palin's run for president, and that'll be fun to watch. But in the meantime, Yvonne's got a game to go watch, and, you know, I've got some, you know, stuff I have to do for work over the weekend, which kind of sucks.
Hopefully I'll get invited. Hopefully I'll be there in person. If not, I'll watch it on TV. But I'll try to see if I can.
After I finish here, I'm going to go off, and I'm going to go off to a coffee shop for the rest of the day and try to concentrate and do the work I have to do. Because I find, like, yeah, I've got some work to do for work that I have to do over the weekend, so I'm doing it at home. And because the last week was really busy with other stuff, and I just can't let it wait. I need to get it done. But, you know, I found that, like, yeah, I do the work from home thing, and I'm actually often very much more productive working from home than I actually am in the office because of distractions. But when I have a task that, like the ones I have this weekend, which are sort of ones where I have to do them, but I really don't want to do them, and I don't find them pleasant to do, and I just have to slog through it, I find that if I'm sitting at home in my home office, I, like, every possible thing, you know.
Except what you're trying to do at hand.
You know,
yes.
I'll be like, oh, there's something interesting on the computer. Oh, maybe I have to go change the baby. Oh, maybe I have to, I'll go upstairs and get a snack, you know.
It's funny.
You know, so, it's different depending on the kind of thing I have to do. Lots of stuff I can just sit and do from home, and it's not a big deal. But when it's this kind of stuff, it's like, you know, I have to give myself an environment that has as little as possible distractions. So I'm going to go off to a coffee shop and spend most of the day there. Now, I still have some distractions. Like, I did this yesterday. We were recording this on Sunday. I did this on Saturday. And I spent the first half of the day, instead of doing what I was supposed to do, going through all of the back email I had for work. Mainly for work, some personal email too, but I spent 3 hours going through other work stuff that really could have waited or might not even have needed to be done at all instead of doing this one thing. And then I finally got around to doing the one thing, and I spent some time on it, but fun stuff. Anyway, so off to the coffee shop to try to do fun stuff.
All right, dude. Go have fun. Okay.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Yes.
And we are all signing off from here. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening to another wacky episode of Curmudgeon's Corner. If you have any questions, thoughts, comments, things, you know, you can email my buddy here at ablesmay@ablesmay.com. And somehow or some way we'll read it and we'll, you know, comment on it or, like, make fun of it or something. Okay. Awesome. All right. Yep.
And tell your friends.
And tell your friends.
Okay. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
See you, Yvonne. Have fun with the game.
I'll try.
Yep.